third base, the leaders from since 1953 are Brooks Robinson, Buddy Bell, Adrian Beltre, Cleek Boyer, Robin Ventura, Scott Rolen, Greg Nettles, Gary Gaetti, Mike Schmidt, Evan Longoria, and Terry Pendleton.
Who was that guy that you said ahead of Scott Rolen?
Robin Ventura.
That guy's pretty good, huh?
Yes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and this week we're getting a grip on defense with the help of Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions. Simon and his co-authors John Dewan, the godfather of gauging good gloves, and Brian Reif have dropped Fielding Bible 5 this week. It continues the Fielding Bible's success at catching new ways to look at defense, better ways to measure it, and who is truly the best at it. Colton Wong has staked his claim to a gold glove, his first, this past season. But the Fielding Bible got there first, seeing him for an elite defender a year earlier. With back-to-back Fielding Bible awards, he's on his way to being the all-defensive second baseman of the 2020s. Paul Goldschmidt is already there as the Fielding Bible's all-glove first baseman of the 2010s. And, as Mark and I discuss, Paul DeJong might be even better defensively than you think. And it's not entirely because of the shifting the Cardinals did last season. In part, it's because of a shift that Fielding Bible 5 has made to even their own metrics to make them sharper, better, and understand what is the team doing and what is the individual doing. Mark and I get into all of that and his conversation with Wizard of Oz, Ozzie Smith, about Hall of Fame defense. In other words, our conversation has range. But before that, let me tell you about our sponsor for 2020, bringing BPIB to you weekly. Imagine your home totally organized. Closet by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Get 40% plus an additional 15% off now. Closets by Design. Call 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Now here's Mark and I talking defense.
Thanks, Mark, for joining me here. And I just want to start by getting a general sense of what has drawn you to the role you have here. Did you always, I've known you for a long time, I've known of your curiosity and your interest in an analytical lens to baseball. Was defense always kind of a draw for you?
I think maybe in a hidden way, I suppose that it was. I'm an everything baseball person, just about. There are very few things that I'm not into. I guess maybe prospect analysis might be one that I'm not great at, but I like everything. So what happened was when I was at ESPN, we signed on with what was then Baseball Info Solutions, which is this company. Mm-hmm. And they came and did a presentation to show us all the data that they had. And it was explained to me. And it was at a time when ESPN was making a transition to have programming that was a little bit smarter and more analytic friendly. And they were asking people that worked in the stats and information group, which is what I worked in, to kind of lead the way on that and set the tone. So I said, well, all right, this is here to embrace. It doesn't seem that hard. And it seems like a niche that a lot of people don't have, and I like those kind of niches. So I guess I grabbed onto it at that point. And then I think probably kind of like you get a little bit of a passion for something. And you just kind of run with it. And then that led me to working for this company now.
Can you tell me just the leaps and bounds that understanding defense has taken, even in, you know, the last 2 years, but certainly in the last 10 years as we've all paid more attention to it?
Sure. Well, there are groups, not just us, certainly. There are people like the folks who invented UZR, and there's another stat that was invented by a guy who's a consultant with the Angels now. And there's a couple of others. There's a book that I think it's Mitchell Humphrey, I hope I'm getting his name right, wrote that that have kind of tried to do for defense what has happened on the offensive side with simply things like OPS or wins above replacement or things of that sort. And I would say the biggest step is that companies like ours are recording much more specific data than previously existed. We're recording, and other places certainly do this too, are recording where the ball is hit, how hard it was hit. So you can establish not just whether a play was made, but how often that play is made and how challenging that play actually is for a fielder. And I think that's the big step.
So it's basically, I mean, the data has gotten to such a level that now there's a control group. Is that a good way to kind of describe it?
I think the data has gotten to the point where there's so much information, and we do have a good base now, because something like defensive run saved has been in existence since 2003. So you've got a large basis of comparison, that a line drive that's hit 95 miles an hour to at a certain angle and is in the air for 3.2 seconds, you have a pretty good idea of how often that ball is a hit or an out. Now, one thing to keep in mind is, like, the ground ball up the middle that used to be a hit 70% of the time, that's no more. That doesn't exist anymore,
right?
Because of defensive shifting, and essentially because of systems like this, I think, so to speak.
Yeah, the shifts have had to change the equation quite a bit. And how much did that – so we're on to Fielding Bible 5, which is coming out.
Yep.
And you introduce sort of a new – what's the way to describe it? A new definition, a new way to calculate defensive run save?
Yeah.
Tell me about how that has, I guess, evolved and now gotten to the point where it has this new look. And then I'll ask you about shifts.
Sure. Well, they kind of go hand in hand. The advent of defensive shifting made things a little harder for us, because our system was based on the idea of kind of a presumption that a guy is playing in a normal or what we would think of as baseball fans as a normal or a semi-normal spot. But now teams are much more specific in where they put guys. So you have to be able to identify how much of a player's defense is actually defense, and how much of it is, and I think this applies to the Cardinals a good amount too, how much of it is putting the guy in the right place where he only has to go two steps instead of, if he had been somewhere else, having to go six or seven steps. So one of the things that's explained in the book is how, like, the nuts and bolts of this is something that would take like 15 minutes to get into, but it's simply the idea of, it's for infielders. A ground ball's hit in the shortstop third base hole. If the fielder is, like, Matt Chapman's a good example. If Matt Chapman is guarding the third base line, or Matt Carpenter even for that example, he's not losing any credit for not getting to that ball. Because he can't get it in the first place. The team may be losing credit for putting him on the third base line, whereas if he had been in a normal spot, he might have had a better shot at it. But he's no longer being penalized for that. Our system was penalizing him for that previously. And with that, we weren't able to fully track player performance and shifts. We were giving all the credit to the team, and we wanted to be able to split the credit and properly reward players who could make plays and players who can't. And one of the cool things now, too, is that we can separate infielder range from positioning and all of that from throwing. So, for example, on the Padres, Fernando Tatis Jr. Is kind of looks like a Omar Vizquel or an Andrelton Simmons in the way that he's able to get to balls. And his range rating for us is among the best in baseball, because we're checking what's essentially a yes or no question. Did he get to the ball? If the answer to that is yes, then we're checking, did he throw the guy out? And in Fernando Tatis' case, he wasn't throwing the guy out last year. He was throwing the ball all over the place. So he was losing throwing credit for not being able to throw the guy out, right? So ideally, you want your shortstop to be good at both. And this allows you to identify, okay, he was really good at one, but he was really poor statistically at another. So that's the big thing that these stats have done. And I'll tell you this, that they certainly made the Cardinal infielders look very good with what we've been able to look at.
Yeah, I wondered if maybe it also helped define now how the Cardinals in middle infield got good, if that makes sense, in the sense that, like, it sounds like you could contrast, okay, Colton Wong, who is one of the rangier second basemen, certainly among the best going to his left and very aggressive, which I think your stats show, versus Paul DeJong, who has really improved on his instincts and been helped by positioning, right? It helps. Does it help kind of describe the two people in that regard, like with how they go about their job to be similarly proficient?
It does, absolutely. And DeJong, I want to put the positioning on the side. He rated in defensive runs saved. He actually had the highest, tied for the highest shortstop number with Javi Baez. And the reason for that was, I think, volume. He played every game, just about, and the Cardinals gave him a lot of chances. There were a lot of ground balls hit up the middle when DeJong was playing that he was able to kind of shuffle over and get to. And you accumulate, make those plays, and you accumulate that over time, and you wind up with a pretty good number. Now, if you were to look at it on a per 1,000 inning basis, Javi Baez jumps ahead of him. There are probably a couple of other guys that jump ahead of him, too. But if we're evaluating the value that a player contributed over the course of an entire season, Paul DeJong was as valuable as any shortstop in baseball last year because, and Ozzie Smith explained this too, and in fact explained it in the book, he made the routine play. Mm-hmm. He made the routine play very well.
Yeah, do you see then, and I want to talk to you about your interview with Ozzie Smith as well. I mean, I found a lot of it fascinating, particularly as he kind of went through some teammates who were underrated or appropriately rated and lauded Ken Oberfeldt for his ability to play and, of course, complimented Terry Pendleton, who I had a chance to see, you know, as coach with the Braves here. And actually, they have a big mural of Terry Pendleton up as part of the new Cool Today Park here in Northport, Florida is where I am. I'm still kind of learning my way around some of the new spots where you have to go to get to Atlanta's new spring training park. But I'm interested, though, in like also in the gap that you saw. So the Cardinals made a year ago in spring training, it was like, okay, this return to fundamentals, this return to run prevention, this return to the type of defense that you knew, because the previous year they were awful. They were just not good defensively. However you wanted to measure it, they had, you know, 20 errors at first base, which was just bonkers, clearly an outlier, but they went back and tracked every error that one of the coaches to find out, was it a throwing error? Was it a fielding error? Was it an error that could have been prevented? Wasn't an error that happened. And they used this sort of as a guideline to improve the defense. And they knew that, you know, just by correcting first base, they were going to make a lot more plays. But did you find some other advancement then between, say, the 2018 Cardinals that were among the league worst in defense or certainly below average to the 2019 Cardinals, which by many measures was the best defense, and certainly when it came to the infield, the most proficient and efficient at turning ground balls into outs?
Yep, and it's funny. It's not something that I think that you would necessarily think of, but the Cardinals made a 20-run improvement jump in the defense of their pitchers, and that's as simple as being able to field balls that were hit back at them. And that's Flaherty had a good number, and Michaelis had a good number. Those are the two that I saw. I looked that up just before we talked. So that was a big improvement. I guess you would say it would kind of be like that kind of takes you by surprise, but it shows you, I think, the value of good defense on ground balls, by not just by your infielders, that you got to have a guy who follows through. Like, watch Zach. If you remember Zach Greinke in Game 7 of the World Series, made a whole bunch of plays. If they win that game, that actually would have been a story as opposed to what happened. I think that pitcher defense had a lot to do with the improvement of the Cardinals last year to this year, and it was kind of a neat thing to see.
How much of that was shifting, did you find? I mean, the Cardinals shifted more in 2019 than I believe they had the three previous years combined. It was pretty close. They were far more aggressive shifting, so much so that they would walk out to the manager would walk out to the diamond and, you know, present little laminated cards to each player so that they knew where to shift. They kind of created this illustration where it was along a number line.
Yep.
4 plus 4 and then -4 the other way, and it gave them a visualization so that they could go up and one hitter would be, you know, the shortstop would be +2 and he would know to go to his left, or another hitter would be -3 and he would go to his right, that kind of thing. It was an interesting way because it has a mathematical route to illustrate, where these guys line up, but it was a language they could all speak, and it allowed them to be more proficient. Did you find that as a big part of it as well?
Yeah, it's funny. In the process of you asking that question, I looked at three players. DeYoung, like half his value came from making plays in defensive shifts. So that's pretty strong. Carlton Wong, it was a huge chunk of his value. It was like, I think it was more like 2/3, 3/4. And then I'm looking at Matt Carpenter. Matt Carpenter, 5 runs saved, 4 runs saved when he was positioned in a defensive shift. So I would say that the Cardinals' defensive shifts work pretty well. And I guess it shows it shows you that it's good to be open-minded, and perhaps their former manager got an understanding of that, because in Kansas City now, and he's talking about being more open to things like that.
Right, right. And that's part of your intro into the book, actually, is Mike Matheny took an analytics course. I want to just kind of take a quick sidebar here so that we can, for folks who maybe aren't as proficient in the lingo of this, so we can kind of put it, in simple terms. When you talk about the pitchers being 20 runs better or Matt Carpenter being 6 runs better, that is quite literally runs. In other words, the Cardinals offense just struggled last year to have any sort of consistency, and then absolutely vanished in the National League Championship Series against Washington Nationals. I mean, historically so. But the 6 runs that Matt Carpenter saved defensively is a net zero if he scores or produces 6 fewer runs offensively, correct? I mean, that's as simple as we get with this.
More or less. So our number is essentially a theoretical number, but it's supposed to be, it's essentially a wins above replacement. It's an approximation. Think of it this way. And again, going back to the ground ball to the third baseman, the one that's hit down the line. If the play is made, it's an out. If the play isn't made, it's a double. And the value of a double, as it compares to the value of an out with regard to a team scoring a run, the probability of a team scoring a run shoots way down if you get the out. So we're assigning a number to that. With each play that a guy makes, there's a run value for that. It's not like if you throw a guy at the plate, it's not necessarily a run save, but it's a pretty good approximation over the course of the season. You have to think of it, though, in terms of what it could have been versus what it actually was. And that's how if players make a lot of plays to rob doubles, they're going to have good run save totals. So third baseman and first baseman, or mostly third baseman and outfielders, can rack up good totals by being guys that, in the case of an outfielder, going into the gap or down the line and making a really good running catch. So the value accumulates over the course of the season. There's about 30, 40 pages of methodology in the book that explains all this in a lot of detail. But in the end, it comes down to, did you make a series of questions? Did you make the play or did you not make the play? Well, and where the ball was hit, is that usually a hit or is it usually an out? And from there, we can assign numbers to that. And over the course of the season, you sum all those up and you get what the player's run save total is.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, for the Cardinals, who probably, again, are going to search for offense a little bit, having that, saran wrap defense that allows very little pass is going to be so essential. And having a way to illustrate that by saying, here's the runs they've saved defensively so that they don't have to score offensively, it kind of allows for us to dig a little into the run differential that is so telling when it comes to, the standings, for example. So it's a very valuable tool to describe this team. I wondered, to your conversation with Ozzie Smith, a quick anecdote here. Dave Duncan was the pitching coach for the Cardinals for a long time, and he kept these meticulous notes on hitters and everything like that. They would involve tendencies, their tendencies on pitches, specific pitches, their tendencies on pitches in specific areas, their tendencies against specific pitchers. And everything. And he'd have these spray charts that would inform where the Cardinals would line up their defense or how a pitcher would attack them. And sometimes he would not have data for a specific pitcher, so he would look for a similar pitcher. And I, you know, Tony La Russa would talk about how analytics is taking the game by storm, and it's like, well, your pitching coach has been doing it for years. You just called it something different,
right?
Because that's essentially what Dave Duncan was doing, was a lot of these analytics by hand, and they were shifting and everything like that. So I always thought it was interesting that, you know, like, analytics by another name is just smart coaching. When you're talking with Ozzie Smith, how much of what he said about defense and how he played it do you think is just a different way of talking about what the numbers are telling us now?
A little bit. He was very into the instinctive acts at the position. And I think the cool thing to that we would have wanted to have tracked for him would have been, we have a system where we track web gym type plays. And it would have been cool to have been able to track that. I think what you said is right, that that I think when you tell someone that it's analytics, that someone, you tell someone that's older, they get a little bit, I guess, off put. But if you just say to them, I'm looking at spray chart data and making determinations off that, I think they get it, and it's easier to relate it to them. Ozzie Smith talked about having good lateral movement left and right. That's what we check on every single play. Is a shortstop or a second baseman able to go to his left, go to his right, and make plays? And Young and Wong certainly do that very well. Those are the things we need to measure. He also talked about pitchers pitching to scouting report, and we heard that when we when we talked to other people too. That one thing, Eric O'Flaherty was talking about this on another podcast I did, that if a pitcher misses his spots, and you have a fielder in a certain place, and the pitcher throws one away when you're expecting him to come inside, you potentially could get dinged for that. And that's not necessarily your fault. But that's where the positioning thing comes in. Because your team put you there, you're not losing the credit. The team is losing the credit. We're able to just measure your athletic skills. So you don't necessarily get punished as much.
Have you taken the time to kind of retrofit some of these stats on some of the game's elite defensive players, meaning the ones that we know they're elite because of the gold gloves they've taken home, or the, you know, the eye test that taught us that Brooks Robinson was tremendous, or, you know, Ozzie Smith was tremendous? Have you kind of been able to retrofit some of these stats?
So,
former players?
I'm going to plug something. This is a popular question. I'm going to plug something that isn't ours. On Baseball Reference, and again, I think this is a Sean Smith project, he was able to go back to, I think it's like the 50s, and he created what is, 1953, he created something that's called Total Zone Runs, which is based on putouts, assists, errors, but how many you would have been expected to make based on certain, I guess, trends of how many balls were hit. And if you look at that system and the leaderboards on Baseball Reference, I like this a lot. Third base, the leaders from since 1953 are Brooks Robinson, Buddy Bell, Adrian Beltre, Cleek Boyer, Robin Ventura, Scott Rolen, Greg Nettles, Gary Gaetti, Mike Schmidt, Evan Longoria, and Terry Pendleton.
Who is that guy that you said ahead of Scott Rolen?
Robin Ventura.
That guy's pretty good, huh?
Yes. They were all pretty good. It looks like, to me...
A little running joke here. Sorry. He's my favorite player when I was young. So, yeah.
Oh, it was Robin Ventura? Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I always have to defend him on the podcast because Rick Hummel comes after him.
Well, and tell me...
He's a really good player.
He's
an
fifth
defensive player.
He's fifth in this stat that does the top third baseman of all time. And every name on that list is a match for, if you talk to any player from their era, they'll say Brooks Robinson and Cleek Boyer were the best. Buddy Bell is the best. Greg Nettles was the best. So I think this stat, and you can do it for other positions too, it looks very similar. I think this stat's pretty good. I think it had Keith Hernandez at first base very high. I'm going to check that one too, because I think I would put stock in a stat that believed, that Keith Hernandez is the best since 1953. Good call on their part. So, so that one's not us. That one is, it's Sean Smith, Total Zone Fielding Runs. Kudos to him. Yep.
No doubt.
Yep.
How long was your conversation with Ozzie Smith, and it's recreated in the book, Bible 5. And so it's there for everybody to see. How long was it? And what was, I mean, was there something that you, that kind of curled up in your ear and still rings as either something that was new or that he put so well that it, it got you thinking about these in new ways?
He was my bucket list guy. I said, if we're going to do this, I want to get what we have some interviews in the book. We have current players, Kevin Pillar, Austin Hedges, Nick Ahmed. I said, I want to get an all time great. And, fortunately, I will give him props. Eduardo Perez helped me, get in touch with Ozzy, and, I got him for 15 minutes, which I thought was pretty good. And I think the cool thing for me was talking about the guys from the 80s and how good Willie McGee was and how good Terry Pendleton was. And I thought that his Terry Pendleton thing was probably one of the better player answers that he gave. Rate him right there with Mike Schmidt in terms of covering ground. He was one of the best going back on the ball with his back to the infield. It was surprising that he was so good when you look at his size. He was very, very consistent. Won three gold gloves. The Obergefell thing was cool. I asked him advice for like high school and college age people who had graduated beyond watching him on the baseball bunch. And he just said, you need reps. He said, just make sure you know the bounces that you're going to get on the field that you're going to play and you should be fine. So he was awesome. It's in the book. It's probably my favorite part of the book, just because it was, as I said, a bucket list kind of guy.
So he's kind of Malcolm Gladwell then of shortstops, where he said you just need reps, you need 10,000 hours of and doing range and stuff. Is that kind of what he offered?
I guess that's a good one. He talked about consistency. That was like he probably used the word be consistent 20 times in the course of 15 minutes.
That's
so I would say,
an interesting drill that they do. They worked it a lot with like David Eckstein and some of these other infielders, Paul DeJong most recently, because they have had a stretch here of infielders that maybe don't have the scout reputation, but end up being pretty proficient with, you know, the advanced stats, partially because of positioning. But some of it also is Jose Oquendo, who's a friend of Ozzie Smith. And they do this interesting drill where Jose will work them through sort of, for lack of a better description, I guess it's like a protractor, right? Draw the field position. And at this angle, the play has to be made this way with the glove here, so your foot is then in position to make the throw there. And they work through like a progression almost across the dial of the protractor, across the 180 degrees of the range. It's really fascinating to watch. And he does the same thing talking with Colton Wong, and he's been a huge part of how Colton Wong has expanded his game because of exactly what you're talking about there, the consistency. There are in the book, there are two other spots that where Cardinals show up that I wanted to ask you about, and one is Colton Wong. He won the Fielding Bible, the equivalent of the Gold Glove Award in the Fielding Bible, which is only given to one player, the best player, and you have a panel that helps choose it, correct?
Yep.
And he won it for the second year in a row. This year was unanimous, is that correct?
I'm sorry, repeat what you just said.
It was that this year it was unanimous, wasn't
it? Yep. He was voted first on every ballot, which is hard with our group.
What does that say about his proficiency and his reputation? Do both of those things kind of spill together into this?
I do think that winning one probably helps you win more, just like with the gold gloves and the manager's component of the vote. But his numbers are like considerably better than the numbers of other second basemen, particularly this past year. And he's covering, I think, in shifts in particular, a very wide amount of ground, and he's taking away balls that should be hits. And even, like, he covers so much ground that Goldschmidt doesn't have to, which I think is a thing that it's kind of, a ball hawking kind of thing, that he's probably getting some of Goldschmidt's credit. Like, Goldschmidt could have made the play, but let's let Colton Wong make it so I can easily cover first base. So he's doing well with regards to that. And there also aren't a lot of second basemen where you're like, whoa, blown away by like a Dustin Pedroia and the way that he plays. So I think he's kind of emerged as that guy for now, and he's won two in a row.
Yes, well, you know, you kind of jumped ahead to my question there, which, or one of the questions I want to ask, because Dustin Pedroia won. You guys did an all-decade team for the defense, and Pedroia won three Fielding Bible Awards, I believe, and then was your guy. He may have won four. I apologize for not knowing specifically. But he was your pick for the all-decade team at second base. How does Colton Wong's year compare to, like, the Pedroia-esque time when, you know, that that stand out? I mean, is he kind of touched on it there, but is he analytically – Pedroia's equal, or is he moving in that direction?
Yeah, the difference between them is that Dustin Pedroia did it 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 7 years where he put up like the kind of numbers that Wong has. And I think that's what the people who say that Arenado is as good as Chapman, that's the other article in the book. No, he's not. But Arenado's done it like 7 years in a row. Chapman's done it three. So let's say this guy, over time, is he going to wear down? And going back to Dustin Pedroia, consistently 13, 14, 18, 11, 12, 10. Those are good numbers year after year after year. Colton Wong's got 2 years of that. And we will see if he can make it work for more.
What would he need to have, and I apologize for putting you on the spot here, but what would he need to have to be the all-time leader? What would be the best year by a second baseman?
Hang on. All right. We're going to do this live on the air. I have access. I have easy access to since 2003.
Because I'm curious.
So remember that it is since 2003. And let's see. Second base looks like. So Mark Ellis had 129, and I think that's all second base. Chase Utley, okay, he had 130. Chase Utley had 121. Orlando Hudson, 101. Ian Kinsler, 100. Wow. Pedroia, 97.
And what's the high? What's the single season high?
Okay, that's an on-the-spotter. I think that's Craig Counsell, 30, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So,
but you got a rough range.
Yeah. And that was at a time where I think he was kind of almost shifting when other people weren't. And he was able to probably rack up, he made this play. Nobody's making this play, so he gets a nice value. That said, Craig Counsell was a very good defensive second baseman. And Andy Green actually said, now the bench coach, former Padre manager, said that he watched Craig Counsell. He learned how to position people by watching Craig Counsell position himself because he was just unbelievable. He had 30 in 2005.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so, I mean, so Colton, it'd be hard to get to that level with the way things are currently calculated.
Yeah, and you also have to remember that you're not second base, you're not robbing doubles, so you're not necessarily picking up as many runs saved quickly as you might. Chase Utley also had 30 in a year, by the way. So those two guys are the leaders. And I think Chase Utley is well-deserved. And I think I don't particularly like Chase Utley for certain baseball fanish reasons. But if I had a vote, and I get a vote, it's a little ways away, but someday I'm going to have a vote. If he's on the ballot, I'll probably be voting for him because I think he was a very complete player.
Yeah, I agree. I covered LSU baseball when Chase Utley was at UCLA and came in for a memorable super regional, I guess it was, way back then, that the LSU team, which did not have the level of talent or the level of kind of name brand talent that UCLA had, LSU just played the game better. They just, you know, UCLA was kind of this jumble of talent that was all moving in different directions, lots of talent, and Utley stood out. Atkins was on the team and all that, but LSU just outplayed him, had the home field advantage. And very memorable, what's that?
No, I was going to say, you know who that is now? That's Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I always was fascinated by Utley because of that, and you just see him become one of the just like sharpest and really savviest ball players, and of course an offensive weapon at that position does stand out. So on the all-decade team, Paul Goldschmidt is the first baseman. And that's a little bit like what you're talking about with Arenado, where It's just over the long haul. He's been so superb at defense. What does that mean to be superb at first base at defense? And does that position get dinged a little unfairly for its defensive importance?
So first base, I think, is the hardest one to evaluate because you're not getting a lot of – you're not getting the chances that a shortstop or second baseman get. And with that, everyone thinks that their first baseman is the best or the worst at scooping throws. In the end, there's only one best and one worst. And I got news for most people. Everybody is really good at it. Like, the difference between the first guy and the 10th guy isn't that great. Maybe the difference between the first guy and the last guy is a big deal. But the difference between is small, so the run save value isn't high for that. So Goldschmidt's peak numbers are like 14 for a season, which is very good for a first baseman. And people will tell you, oh, that should be more because 50 times during the year he scooped a throw that saved an error for an infielder. Well, you know what? Freddie Freeman did that too. Christian Walker did that too. Pete Alonso did that too. A lot of guys do that. And it's hard to you're not going to necessarily stand out doing that. You got to stand out by taking balls that are doubles and turning them into outs. That's how you rack up some runs saved.
And how does Pujols compare? I mean, that goes to, like, all right, the best thing. But when he was at his best defensively, I mean, he's right there in that same group that you're describing, right?
Yep. Albert Pujols has what I believe is the mark for first base. He had 31 in 2007, which is an absurd total. And it's largely driven, I think, by the fact that there were a lot of balls in the 3-4 hole that he was getting to.
Yes. And then he cut first second baseman off to get to,
Yeah, and he's getting he's scoring a lot for that. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. The guy was looking at the ranks, 1-1-1-2-1 over a 5-year period at first base. I actually did a story for The Athletic about Pujols' defense and people just saying how amazing he was, that you could just put the ball anywhere and he would catch it. And he could hit the ball almost anywhere in that 3-4 hole, and he would find a way to get to it. But he had to be active as a pitcher to cover first base because he was going to go way wide off the bag.
Yeah, lots of PFP practice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to, like, the big question surrounding the Cardinals. So they have Colton Wong, who maybe has a head start on being the second baseman for the Fielding Bible Awards for the next decade. Paul Goldschmidt coming out the decade award for this past decade at first base, and Albert Pujols probably being the all-decade Fielding Bible Award winner, if there was one, for the aughts. The big question surrounding the Cardinals with the defense is Yadier Molina's defense good enough to get him into Cooperstown? Where do you think the defensive analytics have gotten with catchers after probably years of struggling as to how to exactly capture somebody involved in every pitch to kind of achieve a way to tell us what we're seeing beyond the eye test?
So we have a number of different ways by which we do evaluations. We have a stolen base rating. We have a pitch framing rating. We have a bunt rating. And we have a blocking pitches in the dirt rating. And in his best, Yadier Molina was number one, number two in those. Over a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like an 8-year period, he was excellent. And I think that if you incorporate that into his wins above replacement, he looks very good. He looks more like a Hall of Famer, I would think. And again, he's someone that I may get a vote on at some point. And I would lean yes on him. I don't know if I'm as yes on him as I am on Utley, but I'm probably going to wind up getting there over time because he was like, now it's Roberto Perez, but back then, nobody, you couldn't steal on him. You couldn't bunt on him. He got you extra strikes. And that's the big thing that pitchers are doing, the pitchers are getting now. They're getting extra strikes from their catchers that may go away with the advent of the electronic strike zone. And he blocked pitches. And he blocked pitches extremely well, just looking at it in front of me here. He was complete He did everything that you could ask him to do from a defensive perspective. And I feel like he's one where the eye tests and the metrics, maybe not the last couple of years because he's gotten old, but the, in his prime, those things come together and they say, hey, he's pretty good. And it boosts his candidacy for sure.
Is it odd for a catcher to be that exceptionally well-rounded? Is it usually that a catcher excels in some of those areas and not in them? Like a guy is really good at framing pitches, but may not be all that great at blocking pitches. Or do you see that all of those tools go hand in hand?
Thank you for asking that question, because the answer to that question is in a study that was done in the book.
It's almost like I had it planned.
Yeah, that one is in there. We found that I think we found that it was hard to be like superstar at both, but you could be good at both. Roberto Perez is someone who's good at both for the Indians. I've given a bunch of American League examples for a National League team. But he's someone that's very good. JT Realmuto last year was very good at throwing out base runners. His pitch framing got a lot better. He's still got a little ways to go in that area. But yeah, you can be, I think you can be good at multiple different things, but it's unusual, the catcher who is really good at all of them, which is what someone like Molina or last year, Yadier, Roberto Perez is. And I say that specifically because Yadi had 30 defensive runs saved in 2013. And in 2019, Roberto Perez was right there with him. So I think that they are linked by that, both with 30 defensive runs saved for a season.
All right, so here's my last question for you then. If Yadier Molina is elected into Cooperstown, is that the validation of defensive analytics? Is that going to be the guy who got there, not because of counting stats, he's got plenty of gold gloves, he's got a couple championships, but do you think that that's the acknowledgement of analytics in the same way, say, a guy who had 12 wins or a losing record winning the Cy Young was the death knell of the wins for pitchers, or any number of things that we've seen here recently where 100 RBI guys maybe don't stand out in every MVP ballot? Do you think if Molina is elected to Cooperstown, that he is the one who gets across the threshold carrying defensive analytics with him?
Good question. I think, okay, so I have a cardinal for this too. I think that the answer to that lies partly with Scott Rolen, because Scott Rolen's defensive metrics are really good for the time period that we've got them for. And I am a big Scott Rolen Cooperstown guy for the overall excellence of his game and for game-winning home run in a Game 7 of an LCS, and essentially a second game-winning home run in a Game 7 of an LCS, 2004 and 2006, right? One against Clemens and then Oliver Perez, the home run that wasn't, that was caught by Andy Chavez. That's still pretty good.
It was right beneath me.
Yeah. Oh, really?
In live.
Yeah. Nice. I was watching it from a different angle. But I think he had a huge vote spike this year, and I was really glad to see it. And I think that if, like, there were a couple of people that got behind Larry Walker, there were people that got behind Blylevin, certainly. I think if there's someone out there that gets loud on Scott Rolen, that he could be, like, the guy that that kind of, I guess, carries that torch, because he's not an elite offensive player. He's a very good offensive player, but he's a really good defensive player. And he's someone that defense would certainly be a considerable component if he was ever elected to the Hall of Fame. And I guess Yadi would be in that class. Omar Vizquel would, I guess, kind of be in that group too.
Interesting. So I'm supposed to say here, challenge accepted, because I think you've come on the podcast to say that Scott Rolen needs a champion. I have consistently voted for him, so I just need to be louder.
You and Jason but Starr.
As we've already established, though, that I have a fondness for third basemen that that probably helps them creep up a little bit. Though regardless of Rick Hummel, of what Rick Hummel tells you, I did not vote for Robin Ventura on the ballot. So, as much as I appreciate his defense, and he's the best college player possibly of all time, he didn't. So, so tell people where you can get the Fielding Bible 5.
Yep, you can go to Amazon.com. You can go to actasports.com, which is ACTASports.com. I think it's the same price at either site. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go to almost anywhere that you get your books. I want to say that it's kind of like you say, well, why do I need to read a book that's an encyclopedia of defensive stats? That sounds kind of, not necessarily that interesting. Well, if you're interested in analytics, if you want to learn something new, and you have an appreciation for what you watch, but you haven't been able to measure defense, essentially, and how good someone is defensively, this is the book for you. I think that you'll find it interesting and entertaining.
I adore the Fielding Bible. I have all of them. I have from the very beginning, because I have, as long as I have been a fan of baseball, I've been mostly a fan of defense, and always craved something. Even as a kid, I was like, fielding percentage stinks. This is terrible. This doesn't tell me anything about how good the range is for a shortstop, and have always wanted something more. And Fielding Bible, as I've been covering baseball, swooped in to offer that. So it's been a great thing. Mark, where can people find you on Twitter as well?
Okay, I do want to give props. There were two other authors on the book, John DeWan and Brian Reeve.
Yeah.
So first of all, let's do that. John is the founder of the company. Brian is one of our computer programming experts, and great for him to get an opportunity to work on this book. You can find me and us on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS, Sports Info Solutions. And you can find me on Twitter at Mark A. Simon Says. And A is just my middle initial. And Mark Simon Says was already taken, so I had to do something else.
All right. So then you have to help me out with one last thing.
Yep.
Am I missing it big time on Omar Vizquel? I've had a real hard time, I'll be honest, voting for him. I'm not sure how I can do it. Am I missing it? Am I missing that he's a Hall of Famer?
I think that 50-50 in what the balloting came up, I guess, this past year, but he's a 50-50 guy. I think that's about right. I wouldn't say he's a slam dunker. He wasn't quite Ozzie Smith. So you have to kind of make a decision as to where you put your line for something like that. I'm not necessarily there to tell someone where to put their line. But Omar Vizquel was a I don't want to say a non-offensive player, but he was not there offensively. And his defensive numbers were very good, but I don't know that they're enough necessarily to push him over the top. I think he's very much a bubble guy, and it's a matter of opinion of the beholder.
Would you like to know why I haven't voted for him?
Why haven't you voted? Because the ballot's too crowded.
Well, because the ballot is too crowded, but also I think he benefited from being on teams with a lot of Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. And while his defense was good, he never led the league in assists. I mean, Ozzie Smith had something like he just had 7 consecutive years of number of assists that Omar Vizquel never got to. And mm-hmm. Omar Vizquel was given longevity because he played on teams that had thump all around him. And so they could go for a defense for a shortstop. And that allowed his offensive game to build. And that allowed him to get a lot of playing time. Whereas like some of his contemporaries who were excellent defensive players didn't have that same blessing. They weren't on a team that could stomach a glove first shortstop. They weren't on a team that was constantly winning and could afford a guy batting eighth or ninth in that spot. And, like a Ray Ordonez, for example, very gifted defensive player. But did he have the longevity? Was he on a team that allowed him the longevity? That's the hurdle that I can't get over.
Yeah, he's a very tough one. Usually there are 3 or 4 guys where I'm sweating over him. I'm sweating over Andrew Jones. I'm saying to myself,
oh, I have voted for him.
Yeah, I'm saying to myself, I'm glad that I don't have to make these choices yet, but I've already started to project out on the guys that are going to be eligible 6-7 years from now. Like, am I going to get to vote for Scherzer kind of thing? And I think there are evaluations there that are kind of fun to do at this point.
Well, I can't wait to share the stress with you, Mark. Welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for all this time, and thanks for your expertise. And, you know, thank you and John and Brian for the Field and Bible 5. Looking forward to it. I really appreciate this conversation.
Yep, you got it.
A special thanks to Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions for joining me to talk about defense and Fielding Bible 5. You can find Fielding Bible 5 all over the internets, wherever you go to get your baseball books, whether it's the local independent bookshop, the big Barnes & Noble box shop, or Amazon.com. It's all available there. You can, of course, check Sports Info Solution as well for all sorts of stuff. This is one of the books that I get every year, and I plunge deep into it with a highlighter and notes and try to use it to inform my coverage because I'm fascinated by defensive metrics. The Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design, is available wherever you get your podcast, including STLtoday.com. That's where you can find our constant Cardinals coverage from spring training, where Ben Fredrickson has his chats. Rick Hummel has the ongoing live game blog, the only place you can find constant updates from the game. And, of course, all the coverage that appears in the paper and exclusive stuff online, particularly for subscribers. We are speeding towards the end of spring training, and that means that on the horizon will also be the 2020 baseball season preview section. So I will tease that in the coming weeks of the Best Podcast in Baseball. BPIB is also available at iTunes. That's where you can listen to individual episodes, download individual episodes. You can subscribe to the podcast. I cannot stress this enough. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible. And as we learn again this year, sponsorships like Closets by Design make the weekly podcast possible. Also, please rate and review the podcast there. We got a new logo, so you could check that out. Tell us whether you like it. Here as we start into the eighth season of BPIB, but also we want to be responsive to the community. Which reminds me, we are going to make a selection as to who won the Where Do You Listen to BIB. I have the books now, so I will mail those out after I notify the winner. So look for that, too, if you participated in the hashtag Where Do I Listen to BPIB. I guess it was just hashtag BPIB, but Where Do You Listen to BPIB. So many great entries into that, and those books will be going out shortly, including the one where one of the listeners asked me to donate a book in his name. So that's happening as well. The Best Podcast in Baseball is a production of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, STLtoday.com, and me. And it's brought to you by Closets by Design. Get organized with Closets by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Don't forget the discount. Call 1-800-BYDESIGN. Again, 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closets by Design of St. Louis, the official sponsor of the Best Podcast in Baseball. And the reason why, we'll talk to you soon. See you next week.
Okay, I'm hitting stop. Okay.